Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Roulette. We are the Telejon Percussion Group, and we are thrilled to have you with us here this evening. It's a very special night. Composer Christian Wolff is here with us as part of the ongoing celebration of his 90th birthday and for the world premiere of a new work for seven percussionists. We are equally thrilled to have Victoria Chia here for the premiere of her new work, Pool with Two Figures, which we will play in a moment. And I would just like to take a second to alert you to one small change from the program, what's printed in the program, which is that there will be a conversation with the composers moderated by Steve Smith, but it will be on the beginning of the second half after intermission rather than after the concert. So you can enjoy a break and then come back and we'll have a little chat and then play some more music. So thank you so much, and I'm going to put this mic away and we'll get started.
Did you keep the mic away from Tom on purpose?
I can speak loudly.
Okay. Well, I think we all can, really. I mean, it's a nice space. Hi, my name is Steve Smith, and I've been writing about music and working as a writer and an editor in this town for the last couple of decades, and I'm looking down at my notes as if I need to remind myself what that is. Mainly because I'm kind of really flabbergasted and geeking out to be here among this all-star squadron of percussionists, Talujan, who I've admired as a listener for so long. I know as a critic I'm not supposed to say things like that, but nevertheless, I mean, this is the big leagues. And then I'm also here with two composers whose work I'm just absolutely in love with. So Tom Kolor is on my left here, speaking for Talujan. Victoria Chea, we just heard her piece a moment ago. And Christian Wolf needs no introduction. I'm going to provide one anyway. So Victoria is someone who I actually got to know a little bit when I moved to Boston, because there wasn't a whole lot of big-level new music going on in Boston at the moment. I mean, little bits and pieces, but there was this one really, really awesome band called Sound Icon that, you know, any composer you can think of, oh, I really wish I could hear some Grise, but nobody's doing that. Sound Icon was doing that, and they were doing new music as well, and so, you know, I was sort of like in awe from that moment on. I've also gotten to know a lot of Victoria's music from recordings. You know, she's working with Talea Ensemble now, but she has composed for And Play, Yarn Wire, Dal Niente, Guerrilla Opera, the list goes on and on and on, and everything is individual and distinctive, and I'm just honest to God a fan. So welcome, Victoria, and we will come back to you in just a moment. We've got to get to this guy on the end. Christian Wolf recently celebrated his 90th birthday at Judson Church. And usually when it's your birthday, you're the one getting all the gifts, but Christian wrote a new piece for the occasion, so he is still giving us gifts on the regular basis, and we're about to get another one in just a few moments. It's really quite amazing. You know, Christian came of creative age during the 1950s, forming what was called the New York School, along with John Cage, Morton Feldman, David Tudor, Earl Brown. He is the last who is still among us, extending that legacy and sharing it with newer composers. And, you know, he was the youngest of the group, but Cage and Feldman openly expressed how indebted they were to Christian for his ideas and what they learned from him. And that influence continues on to today. Tom, I'm going to start with you and simply ask quite specifically, why these two composers, why did you invite them to write these new pieces? And I understand that these are both ongoing relationships.
Exactly.
Okay.
Thank you. Christian Wolf, we worked with him, I would say maybe 10 years ago, yeah, at the Paul R. Cooper Gallery. We played his large-scale work called Merce, and that's when the relationship began, and we're truly honored to have this piece and to be able to premiere it today. And Victoria was another person who we admired. We had not worked with her before as a group. As individuals, many of us have. And so that's where the connection sort of came about.
And what in specific did you, when you asked them to write pieces for the group, did you give them any kind of instructions or just say,
nope,
you go?
You go.
All right. Awesome. So then where we go next is to Victoria, because there are so many things to say about this piece. And having heard it, you know, I'm sort of still sort of in awe. I mean, Victoria, everything that she's written that I've heard shows a really, really sophisticated grasp of timbre and of textures and of the way that things resonate in space and the way that resonances kind of blend and crash and form new sounds that aren't actually physically in the space. So it's really, it's a treat to be in the same space with this. You know, the piece was just beautiful. But the things that I want to talk about aren't about the sound, but about the inspiration. The piece, Pool with Two Figures, is named for a 1972 David Hockney painting. And I wonder if you can talk about first how that comes in, how that is expressed in what you did.
Sure, thank you. First of all, I just want to say it's really awesome to be here with Talujan and also with Christian and you, Smith. Steve. Do you want the real answer, or do you want like a
kind of? You've got the microphone.
Well, so if you're not familiar with this painting, portrait of an artist, Pool with Two Figures, of 1972, David Hockney, it was apparently like the largest grossing painting. It sold for a lot of money, like a lot of money.
A lot of money.
which is not why I'm interested in it. It was a poster hanging in the bedroom of someone that I knew intimately. Mm-hmm. But not just the poster, it was specifically from a retrospective of a 1988 retrospective of Hockney's work mm-hmm. in his room. So there's a lot of personal things that are related to this piece, and it kind of just got more and more embedded with this piece for Talajan, because it was the painting, it was the situation, which I won't go into, forgive me, but this kind of embedded idea of intimacy and also voyeurism, of also understanding who you are against who you're with and what you want to say and how you say it, and with the kind of time it takes to express who you are in whatever way that you are.
Yeah, and it's kind of a strangely, it's a paradoxical painting, because the figures are very plain spoken. There's no ambiguity about the picture that you're looking at, but yet the meaning inside these two figures, one of them floating face down in a pool, is completely oblique. And so it's kind of interesting that you were able to personalize that in sound. The other thing that I wanted to ask about is a little secret about the piece, which is that you wouldn't have heard this necessarily, but you may have intuited there were things going on here and there. I looked at the score in advance, so I was listening for it. There are actual phrases of text embedded in the score. They are not to be spoken. They are not even really to be revealed, but yet they are there to cue the performers on how to shape their phrases. And perhaps, I mean, is it also a cue for how to think about their phrases?
Yeah, 100%. So something I've been working with or trying to like explore is how to introduce expression in a way that's not like quantized, if that makes sense. So a lot of what we do as classical composers, at least from my experience and my training, is expressing ideas through objectifiable or pitches, rhythms, dynamics, language that has been codified through history. And I wanted to find a way to encourage that kind of expression that could be found outside of that. So this text, which I gave to the amplified temple bowl, and also the spring coil, which was amplified as well, toy piano, all those kinds of things, were meant to express the cadence and phrasing of text or of words, and the poetic idea behind the words that I was giving them was a prompt to interpret what those phrases should mean, and that's the idea behind that.
It's an amazing technique, and I just found myself really leaning into it. Maybe that's why you keep it secret, so that people aren't sort of saying, well,
little
what's
bit.
Going on?
Little
that last phrase. But also just the dynamics really. There's an instruction to the performers in there, brush the chimes like putting someone to sleep. I mean, all of the instructions and everything around the piece is just so deeply imaginative. And I want to turn now to Christian, because I could very much go on all night with anyone who's up here. You've written actually rather a lot of music for percussion, solo, duo, ensemble, and so on. What did you set out specifically to do in this new piece that we're about to hear?
I don't know. I had this, obviously there are parameters with which you start. One is the material, and the ensemble, and the particular players, whom I hadn't heard play for 10 years, I guess it is, but still, I had some sense of who they were and what they were doing, and presumably the personnel has changed somewhat and so forth, but still, I had an image, and it was a wonderful performance, the other one, the one 10 years ago. So that was in the back of my mind, the players. And then otherwise, the percussion, I've been lucky to know some very good percussion players. One in particular is Robin Shulkowski, and I've done a lot of work with her, so that's partly why there's so much of this stuff. As far as this piece goes, well, they wanted a piece for seven players, and so that's the material, right? It's this particular group that I know, and it's seven players. So I just start and see what happens.
Right.
I knew it wasn't. I have done a small set of pieces called Fall 1, 2, and 3, which use only drum sounds, very monochromatic, so to speak. So I knew it wasn't going to be like that. There's going to be a variety of color. And that's almost about it. When I write, I just sort of start and see where it goes. I have no master plan. I do have, obviously, you always start with the sound resources, which are the percussion, mm-hmm. and then you do have a sense of scale. They wanted a longer piece. I've forgotten what we, 20, 30 minutes, something mm-hmm. like that. So those are essential things to know before you start, at least for me. And I just start and see what happens.
Right, and you left quite a bit to the performer's discretion in terms of you say what kind of idiophones to use, but not precisely what. So I was doing a little tally up there beforehand, and I saw flower pots and temple bells and blocks and pots and pans. There's a harmonica over there in Ian's setup. So, you know, you've specified the kinds of things to do. And in the first five pages, you're also, the notation is very specific. It's very straightforward and easy to read. And then on page six, let's talk about page six. Page six is something like this. It's actually, the first thing I thought of was a seismograph, although maybe it's a little too early to use that term here right this minute. So I kind of wondered what it was that you were trying to prompt or enable when you get to the point where all there is shapes.
Right. Actually, what you're describing is a way of indicating continuities which are not within a pulse. Mm-hmm. It's basically there's one sound, and when it's finished, the next sound has to pick up immediately. And how long that first sound is going to be is open. So it's a kind of one player plays, and that's easy, mm-hmm. and decides that somewhere is enough. And the second player is just waiting. When is he going to finish? The minute he realizes it's done, then he has to play, or she. And then that moves to somewhere else. And in the meantime, there might be another group doing similar things, so you get a kind of two-part situation in doing that. And the reason for doing that is to shift the focus onto the performers specifically, not just on the notes, and also to get a kind of rhythm that I don't think you're going to get any other way. That's really the main reason. Because it's the rhythm of, you know, of picking up, of hearing something and then just doing it. And it's not, there's no way that has a pulse. It's just, it's a kind of, it's a totally different kind of sense of rhythm, yeah?
Right. And it also, I mean, it extends something that we talked about before. I had the privilege of talking to Christian for a New York Times piece back in March, and there was something that you talked about that you've striven to do in a lot of your pieces, which is make it essential that the musicians are keeping in contact with one another, not just making eye contact, but you have to listen, you have to be attentive, and you have to share and be part of a community. You can't move forward until someone else has done their part. So everything is very interdependent. And so I appreciated that this is another embodiment of that. And so I want to come back to Tom and ask you, in the fleeting time that we have left, what the primary challenges were for the group in these two pieces. And I noticed, for instance, that some of you have your backs turned, you're all facing inward. So there was a lot of cueing going on in Victoria's piece. What the challenges were, and also then what the foremost pleasure is in each of these pieces.
Okay, thank you. Well, in Victoria's piece, I think one of the main challenges was just simple coordination first, and delicacy of sound, and the piece is set up with timings, so it's very user-friendly in that sense. And the joy is living in these sounds,
yes.
And just swimming in these great sounds.
Swimming specifically.
Yes. And it's pretty much the same for Christian's piece. You know, we had more sort of say as to what we used instrument-wise. So there's a lot of discussion about that and back and forth. And listening also to the pitches of these quote-unquote unpitched instruments, because they're pretty much all, even if the pitches are not specified, I think most, I would say 90% or more of these instruments are very pitch specific. And there's a little bit of noise, but it's a very, very pitchy piece. So we talked about tunings and instrument choices, and we sort of workshopped that. Everyone came into the rehearsal with sort of a set idea and their own setup, but then we sort of powwow and go back and forth and argue about what we're going to use.
Fantastic. I think that is our time allotment. Like I said, I would be happy to go on and on and on, but we have another piece to hear, and it is a Christian Wolf world premiere. So Tom Kolor, Victoria Chia, Christian Wolf, I'm Steve Smith. Thank you for coming, and thank you for listening.
Thank you. Thank you.